Hanukkah. Why was imagining? Something is stirring in me now. Some age-old understanding has awoken deep inside me as I come to know again the deep intimacy of belonging to this place with every cell of my being. Here on this heather-covered hillside, I am a wild imagining. My body is the entire valley stretched out sleeping in the sun, from Samantha in the north to Kintuli in the south. Wild swans swim in the still ponds of my eyes, a hair bound across my bosom. When a hawk's shadow darkens my skin, snipes screech a warning, flying frantically in every direction. My shirt is a summer meadow, dew washed and perfumed with wildflowers. A pheasant is nesting in the pocket, and in the separate enclosure of my collar, a blackbird is singing on a whitethorn bough. I have never felt so beautiful. Such music has never pulsed through my veins. Such words, ecstatic vibrations in the arteries of my stream. Such visions. My eyes are stars gazing out across the immaculate imagination of a moonlit sky. No tongue has known such parables of stone as my wild hilltop speak in the broad bowel dialect of their rugged boulders, the wind that is hieroglyphs from the manuscript of my skin. These woods are my dreams, these moors are my memories. Through myself I wander barefoot, praying for visions, turning the pages of my own green gospel in time to the seasons. All around is a living mythology, a shrine preserving my people's souls, layer upon layer of monuments and memory, woven together with style and with song, till the landscape itself is my language, Mogaya Changa, my native tongue. Here I kneel on the proud ground of my people and realize the true wealth of my inheritance. Here my roots reach deep and remember, my voice wells up full of ancestral songs, and my eyes weep rivers of eloquence. Here I find my power and my peace. My difference no longer seeks acceptance. My contradictions cease to persist, and all my selves find integration as I become a valley in the mountains, as I become a landscape dreaming.
Thanks very much, Patty. Okay, next we have Joe Sweeney. Hello, good evening. Another little extract from Maeve Gonnell. She's a teacher. She's a teacher in a very rough school, and she's a nicely well-bred, intelligent lady, and she's having difficulties with the students. And last week, you may remember, one of the pupils had beaten another pupil in the arm, and she was thinking he'd become a vampire or was watching too many vampire films. Anyway, here goes. Dear Principal, 1225, I know it's only 10 minutes since I last wrote to you, but I simply must write again. You remember I released the starving pupil from the press, following a riot in the class, and put him sitting at the back. Well, his mouth, Principal, is covered in blood. He has already demolished the duster I gave him to bite into several minutes ago, and now his mouth and lips are all red. Wonder who he has bitten now. The other children are cowering in the corner. Must act immediately. 12:33. Just to keep you up to speed with developments, when I saw the pupil's red lips, I grabbed the ruler, intending to use it as a stake, and advanced towards him, telling the other pupils to keep back. Just as I was about to strike, I noticed that he'd been chewing the end of a biro, a red biro. It's ink on his lips and mouth, thank God, not blood. there isn't a clove, a garlic, a crucifix, or a proper steak within miles. 12:40. It's nearly lunchtime. The pupils look dangerously ravenous. I feel like someone at the edge of a pool with a school of piranha fish circling round, just waiting for me to make their day. The whole class is staring at me, and I am staring back. Occasionally I stare at the door longingly. At least the banging and stamping has ceased since I released Drac from the press. What time is it? Hope the bell rings before things get any uglier. Must end my correspondence at this point now, principal, so as to give myself time to make a hurried exit should that prove necessary. Meal time has a different meaning to this particular class, a more sinister one. Bon appetit, yours, etc., May, a real survivor. P.S. Can't wait to see the wig. I'm in need of a good laugh. P.S. If you have any garlic, could you send some down this afternoon, just in case, you know? I don't believe in such things, of course, but you just never know. A crucifix as well, maybe? 2:15 in the afternoon. Dear Ponsible, Principal, you will be glad to hear that I got out of one hour without further incident. I've lost another barrow, I'm afraid. I loaned it earlier to a child who made himself scarce when he knew I was coming to get it back. He probably kept it just in case he couldn't find anything else to chew on during the lunch break. You know, it's really hard to believe that these children can be so poor that they can't afford copies or pens and maybe half starve at lunchtime. I thought that kind of thing went out with Dickens. One 13-year-old told me that they spend whatever money they have on PlayStation, crisps, drugs, and rock and roll. I think the world has gone mad. Yours, in your dreams.
Thank you, Jim. Next up, O'Neill favorite, Mary O'Connell. This is a serious one. It's called Sad Reflection. It's about a mirror, a mirror speaking. Surrounded by shades, I lie still, waiting for a chance to reappear. Your steps, growing louder, pull me back to life. I struggle up to meet you, rising to the surface, to hold your searching gaze. As usual, you are rushing off, radiant and free, to somewhere else. Your visits, as you scrutinize my form, are summary and swift. You smooth a dress, not a chiffon scarf. I long for you to linger, but you go, leaving me to darkness. Unaware as I sink down that the shadow at my core you never wish to see may someday reemerge to catch your double take as you stare in disbelief at what you have become.
Next up we have Niall Harriott.
The Seer and the Echo Line. This was written when I was living in Westport, County Mayo. And it's about an old humpback bridge that the railway line went from Westport to Echo. Just over a century ago, the very first train to Echo puffed laboriously under your arch. Carrying back to Echo, Patty Halkirk, 32 and all, drowned near Westport Quay beneath the sails of a capsized yawl. Rian Rua of Kiabon saw it hundreds of years before. 63 years ago, the very last train to Echo puffed desolately under your arch. Carrying back to Echo, 10 youngsters' charred remains, victims of the bossy blaze in the Ayrshire potato lanes. Rian Rua saw that too, hundreds of years before. Iron wheels horsed with carriages, belching fire and smoke, would carry coffins, said the seer, on the first and last journey to Echo, from the quay at Carrignamart. The second one is, you may have done it before here, but I just like to do it because I see it as an elegy for the Celtic Tiger. It's dedicated to those wanker bankers and their corporate friends who have us in such a mess. Land of 100,000 Feco. It's inspired by Woody Guthrie's song. I'd sing it, but I'll spare you the torture. So I'll just do it in rhyming couplets and as a verse. Travel through this country from east to western shore really made me wonder the things I heard and saw. Saw the failing farmer filling forms about his cows. Heard the auction hammer and knocking down his house. Talked to fed up fishermen idle on the shore. Fish officials saying, not much fish there anymore. In the capital of boom and bust, the humour is laconic. Putting up a bloody spike seems feckin' ironic. Billions into dock vans from Celtic Tiger guys. Did no one ever tell them the sea is going to rise? Heard residents pleading for local democracy, battling for zero waste, no burning hypocrisy. Went to a writer's bash in the charming party city, people saying bitterly, why is our water shitty? Now we have a war port where the soldiers transit. Are we accessories to crime? No politician banned it. Saw the factory worker, she's just lost her job. Boss is saying, relocate, save a good few bob. In the Venice of the South, where the crack is finer, no more of the flies are either, cheaper to make in China. Office parties, traffic jams, huge loan for houses. That's a progressive recipe for strife between spouses. Steamrolling the people to bring the gas to shore. Just who is shelling out? Who and what's it for? Econuts in the trees, Mother Nature's last defense. Murphs are more important, have a little sense. Heard the poor old patient on a corridor trolley. What the hell is happening to all that taxes lolly? Heard the weary citizen wondering if to vote. Vote no, and they'll tell us, don't rock the second boat. Second richest nation, some children still ill-fed. Others open to abuse, brought in utter dread. Traveled all this country, through this booming land. Hope we'd get together, together make it stand. Gandhi-like, right? For 100,000 welcomes in a green and pleasant place. People before vast profits and a state with a human face. Thank you.
Thanks everyone also for taking time to acknowledging the economy of time. About 3 or 4 minutes per reader. So next up we have another OVL favorite, Shayla Tarrington.
Thanks, Jennifer. There was an old man in Ringsend. This diary his missus had penned. A lover with style goes that extra mile. So far, I don't have to pretend. A slight correction. I've made a slight correction in pages 1 and 2 that alters my complexion, but not my point of view. I've made a slight correction in pages 2 and 3. I've practiced this dissection beyond the nth degree. I've made a slight correction in pages 3 and 4. In line with your direction, that sometimes less is more, I've made a slight correction in pages 4 and 5. With solemn introspection, I scan my sloppy drive. I've made a slight correction in pages 5 and 6. The strains of imperfection take root in lexic tricks. I've made a slight correction in pages 6 and 7. The blizzards of rejection obscure my way to heaven. I've made a slight correction in pages 7, 8. It's such a sad reflection on all my work to date. I'll make no more corrections. In pages 8 or 9, betraying my predilection in every single line, I tipped one last correction, exploding myths, and then, deleting every section, I pulverized my pen. There was an old man in Kilkee who never possessed an ID. When asked for his name, his answer is the same: I haven't the slightest ID.
Thank you. And next up, we're very lucky to have Rosie O'Regan. Short, so you're all right. Just calling you the place. A person can be lost and fall into place without a trace of confusion. The states sound in an instant as they foot drum their grounding while limbo fingers glide, stringing and singing their belonging. The fullness of the moment. That moment where music lifts the lid and there is no hiding and you do not shy away. And just like that, you are right where you're meant to be. And the music plays. The music plays.
Brilliant stuff, Rosie. Thank you. Okay, and next, we're very lucky to have Miriam Casey.
Burn, what's wrong with you, lad? Asked the brother instantly. For the love of God, tell us why you're quite whinging there like an old woman. The class strained to listen. Nathaniel gazed sorrowfully at the master. I'm thinking of the dog, brother, he whispered. He was only doing his duty, guiding his master's home, and for the poor beast to die in such pain like that. There was an unearthly silence. Christy thought the brother's twitch would pick off and go down from the room. Then it came, the roar of mounting fury. The poor beast! Is that what you're saying? The poor beast. Only for Kukulin's bravery and skill, he was being mauled to bits. His bones left with clothes to pick from. And all you can think about is the flaming poor beast. Are you with the birds, lad? No, brother, Flaherty piped up with a snigger. It was the Bastille, so maybe the blinking sheep. Flaherty nasty. There was an almighty explosion of laughter, and that Nero Flaherty leaned over to clap him on the back. Christy felt his hat was dry. They were a herd of jackasses, the lot of them. Mouths open, brain, delighted to be mocking Byrne, who wouldn't or couldn't defend himself. The brother was joining in, smiling his disdain for Nathaniel, and the fool Byrne was actually looking around, grinning away at everyone. Did not see that they hated him, wanted to hurt him because they didn't understand him. Christy on smash up Lance's big gob into smithereens, and then shake and shake Nathaniel until he begged for mercy. The brother raised his hand to silence. Nathaniel Byrne, he began in cold, contemptuous tones. You're a disgrace to your ancestors, the O'Byrnes of Cashel. Tis they were the true and fearless patriots. They loved their country and they died for her in honour, fighting against the foe. They died for your freedom, Byrne. Great men, but you. Never do I see you playing our great national games, or out hunting in the fields like all the other lads. All you could do is dream up silly womanish talk, recite pretty flowery words, or cry about the pain of the poor beast. Now is the Christian doctrine book.
Tell me your father what the market thing.
Thank you.
Thank you for catching me. Okay. And next we have Fiona Reardon. It's not sure all about films and films that will be. Faces talkative amongst the trees in the dark, speech beyond tale. The audience waits. Some search the hair of the heads in front of them, some frown. The person who has just sat down is blocking their view. Those who wear glasses look as though they have tiny television screens over each eye. Smiles beneath those screens flicker ambiguous. Some people tentatively tilt their heads together, gossip hopping the gap between their shoulders. Laughter hides and lips twitches. Since we should be quiet as the film begins. Someone issues a hiss and it settles as a blanket. Head sinks below the tide of headrest. Mind silence the film. Thanks.
Thank you, and it's good to see you the last couple of weeks coming with something to read. So, thank you.
Next we have Inda Corrigan. Thank you.
This is more of a nonsense rhyme than a poem, but anyway. It's called When I Play Snooker With My Snake. When I play snooker with my snake, I use him as a cue. For every one shot that I take, he insists on taking two. When I go golfing with my snake, I use him as a club. I hit my ball into the lake, and his went in the throat. When I go fishing with my snake, I use him as a rod. We dream while we are still awake of haddock, plates, and cod. Thank you.
But a nonsense is always awesome. I regret to say it's the last call, so now's the time. Okay, next we have Donica Mann.
The Muse. Bubbles rising, small silvery circles of inspiration, lazily swim the eddies of the mind, rising with their precious cargo to keep their own time. Never hurried or worried until that last rush to the surface, a dizzy maelstrom of wonder and genius in a gap. Bubbles rising, not from the shallows of memories, but the slow stretching currents of dreams. Bubbles rising from the depths, the abyss of the subconscious, the prison of the damned and forgotten, home to the raw, carnal anger, passion, fear, the creature, that we keep crushed in the abyss with the weight of our hope, sense, order, and control. But the depths themselves do not breathe, and the bubbles have to rise from somewhere.
Thanks very much. Next we have Laura James.
The whole narcissist pirate thing has got me thus far, but being inherently cockney has somehow daunted my elocution. The mask has become, well, it's become a fucking face, isn't it? I didn't start by then. I didn't aim to be my own fucking stereotype. I wanted to be what everyone thought I could be. That princess that smiled and had a secret that didn't call me treacle. Instead I cackle. I use the word cock as a comma. I get drunk and wake up wondering where the floral arrangement and the wandering slipper has come from. Is this anywhere near what a woman is? My smile lights something, even if it's just a cigarette. My legs are amazing, even if only it's striding across the moors in the dust light. My mind has seen its share, even if only through my eyes. Wow, it's a fucking start, isn't it?
So the thing that I love the most about O'Vale is that we've got this great base of the old school people that come all the time, and then we always have this new blood that brings lovely, lovely stuff. Thanks so much for bringing your new stuff and your old stuff. Makes me happy. Okay, enough for me. Bree Buckley is next.
It's called Mirrors. I paint my face, I paint my hair, but still cannot compare to the girl who vomits sparkles and moon leaves clips adorn her hair. I read the books in a page who looks it will not suffice. Always the one to raise the flames, it's gutted from the ice. Her tears are the battles of two, voice the nightingale's coop over night's dominion. But no one can make out what she's saying over the love songs always playing. Black core remains intact. Those who glimpsed her black face, the whitest thing they've ever seen. The light at the end of the tunnel, or the other way around, it seems. She is a sister of shadows, grows taller and shorter as poets start to paddle. She is made in our image, or we are from her, depending which aspect you stand on. In the eye of the storm, you may find her, the calm between passion's wooden posts. You'll find her gathering leaves and strewing them on the wind like rose petals. She blows these kisses from her attic. She is the static that makes poetry of the flesh. She swims in air like an underwater mammal, with molten gold strapped around her sandals. The swish of her brilliant white nightgown in the mind of all who dream can be found. The echo of her footfall on the stair creeps up on many unawares. Her handcuffs teach in lightness of the breeze that lifts the clouds of darkness, allowing us to see, for a second, the something we've been searching for. Until alarm bells ring, and once again we wake, held back by hands of time, made mute by our mouths, and fall flailing back to drowning in a panel of beasts and tinted glass. Only she can see the white bones through the skin, as we trail from house to house looking for silver and searching for sand, while all the while wishing, hoping, praying to be with her one day, or at least to glimpse her in the mirror, whether she lights up the darkness from without or within. She is the ghost many have walked through, but few have stopped her long enough to meet her gaze.
We have another guest down from Dublin, very lucky to have him come back to us. Desmond Storrs.
I am on cloud bank, I'm a bit bloody, not pissed, but I'm getting there. Desmond McCroom, Earls of Desmond, 2 weeks ago I bloody realised I was genetically the girlfriend of the prophetess. Seriously, speaking tongues, mad what's going on, but she reckons that I'm genetically, you know what I mean, Earls of Desmond, that's me. Get bending, you bastards! Sorry, I'm only joking, yeah. Shut up, Hillary! Oh, how did Michael Collins poem finish up? I can feel, doesn't it? You know what I mean? Michael Collins. Don't mention that name to me. I will finish with this one. This one. Upon the tide flowing from a summer's night comes love, empty of promise, offering no choice, chance, or means to utter a prayer, but swelling the muse, shared empty and turned inside out by a rational process of time returning its skin. Let the bones of battered misgivings, the broken truth, fully conceived, swallowed, spat out alone and searching the mind for a soulmate when unguarded moments abandon the impulse of sense. Untroubled by the pale defeat of ghost light dawning on past fields lost, seize the gift of faith, confide in belief, keep counsel with the tree of life rooted in the heart, and pray for hope. Emerge from the melting absence of the passionate self yawning awake, and confer change in the deportment conscious act of deploying decorum at all times, until the final departure is logged, recorded, and halts the call of eternal love. Surrender a mystery a day to what clear light switches on God from within. Hear that,
was definitely a winner. Excellent. Okay, and delighted to have another OVL favorite, Alan Tetley.
A short poem and translation mind. I think a couple of weeks ago I wrote a poem about mushrooms, and for some reason I know nothing about nature whatsoever. I can't tell the difference between a nettle and a daisy, except when you handle them, obviously. I've been writing poems about mushrooms for various reasons, so this is mushrooms again. In Irish they are fossae mite, the grown one night miracles, but also cupon brúchta, a cup of dew. Then again even cossapuca, fairy's feet. We can baptize them as we meet them on the grass. I see snail umbrellas and tongues of earth and Catherine wheels of white. Not to mention, depending on girth, size of ghosts and spirit spits. What about the bud of brightness or the button of the world? A mushroom is itself just what we see. but much more what we wish it to be. There's a translation from a Scottish Gaelic poem from the 18th century, and I said before, the great thing about a translation of Scottish Gaelic, none of you have a fucking clue, you know. I can really chance my arm, which I'm good at, believe me. And this is a song from the 18th century, but it's actually a very sad song, despite my appearance. It's a woman who wrote a poem for her husband who was killed in the terrible Battle of Culloden on the 15th of April in 1646. And she blames not so much the English, but she blames that stupid, sodden bastard, Bonnie Prince Charlie, who hadn't killed or anything. So it's basically a song, and if you bear with me, I'll sing a verse or two, and then I'll translate it into English. Maybe that might do it. Don't really know the words, that's why I have to look at it from there. Stuart, Hugo warm gaf ni fadwn, hon yn codyn o ddŵr. Ha croes ha cwreg, ha mi clwach me geile. Gedych o si y mwnar, gam si yn sotwl a chlene. Morwm galog, cwnish hogus yn cwael, nwn i chair y ddianna. Down the hay are her mother, snack mine with your bra. A sea marian o mador, they go chuck not million. It's my hogra ho wider, or toy to marima, maroon gallo. And the problem with Gaelic songs is they go on for about 40 verses, so I won't torture with it. But this is a translation, My Bright Young Love. O young Charles Stuart, your cause has destroyed me. Your war has left me with poison and hurt. I care nothing for cattle or friends, but my man only, whom you have killed and I'm left with his shirt. Who will now lift the sword or fill the chair in the corner? Not that I care for this, now my true love is dead. But how can I deny what my nature's demanding? For certain, no usurper to put in your stead. My love was no boozer, wasting in the black tavern, but he paid his fair dues when others fell down. Getting pissed wasn't his way, he learned it not early, nor messing with women who weren't his own. You are gone from me, my husband, and I say now no lie, that all those other widows, they had naught to compare with you, my great lover, who was better than all of them, and on Moorish Culloden bloodily died. But is there any hope that I will not be lamenting always? I lost hope that you would return, yet my heart grieves and frets, and nothing will raise it, no pipe, nor harp, nor battle music, nor for younger men do I crave, nor swear, nor wet. For a while I did think that my lover was living, that he would return, if not with trumpet and drum, but with four limbs crawling, and shards not unbroken, with bits of him working, to me he would come.
Thank you very much. Really beautiful evening, and as surprisingly, I was too much of a taskmaster. We've 15 minutes left, and there's tons of room for poetry. If you've got two or three you'd like to share. Anybody? Five of them last call. Oh, here we go.
I remember a poem called Out of Air Appointments, the moment my daughter was born 21 years ago in April. She's a Taurian, so it's called Out of Air Appointments. When you hit the bullseye, Asgard checked her watch and smiled as she listened to your perinatal soliloquy. Just another arrival to the working audience. But I swear, I witnessed Zeus throw a kiss to the blind usurpers. Both gods and men awakened. Thank you. I was doing a Matthew Finney workshop. He asked us to write a poem about a part of the body. And I remember that I have the same shaped hand as my father, and I have a habit of doing lots of things that he used to do when he was a carpenter, and I used to follow him around as a child. And I hold a saw the same as he does, and I hold a hammer the same way as he does, and I write similar to him as well. And when I was refereeing, for example, he was a referee, I had to hold a whistle the same way he would, and lots of things. So it all just consolidated and arrived, and I hope I can remember it. I call it tactile memories. How do I know to run these peat over the invited dead? What talk to use when indicating? Yet I rub the caramantic map with unromantic oils and smooth each surface of life and dress the contrasting surfaces with shavings toiled in empty, unhooked places, holding spear's index at the ready. Ungloved you gave to give me life. Beyond our cast ring of DNA, I applaud you. Thanks.
If I'm not mistaken, is there another volunteer from home? No, that was mistaken. There's a request for Billy Ramsell over here. No.
You got a bad run, I believe.
Yeah. It's only come out special for you.
You're off the fucking layer, you know that? He said, "My hand is ten doubles of them are there."
Oh yeah.
I'll do this one here. I could have sworn. Well, not last week, didn't I? Did it one. And this is one about I like hurling, the sport of hurling. This is a poem about the gods watching a hurling match. It was half time. Aphrodite sashayed from the kitchen with a tartan tea tray. Hermes looked from the soiled dinner dishes to the telly to the paisley wallpaper and emitted a long sigh of boredom. Zeus sighed, his lip curling in jaded disdain as Aphrodite placed his Twix mug in front of him. For to make matters worse, this was winter hurling. A far cry from the tossed salad bowl stadiums of summer, drizzled on Sunday drenched in sizzling heat and sound. No, this was their somehow Soviet winter equivalent. Slabs of grey deserted masonry. Hurling, like most team sports, isn't much fun when you know how it finishes. And being gods, they knew almost everything. Hermes unslumped himself in his brown, threadbare armchair. "Let's get out of here," he said to his father. "Let's repair to the bottoms-up slush club in Brighton. Take Anya and Susanna upstairs for a private dance. Or what about this? Let's turn all the lights on and off in Calcutta all at once, before gently molesting two Bengali princesses in a dream each will wake from pregnant with a gold-clawed swan. Or we could make of ourselves some glittering evanescence, and mate with nebulae out at the galaxy's freezing edge, the eagle or the horsehead. Leave them as sprawling eternities of pulsing want, planet pregnant, pregnant stars. Or at least could we turn the station over to Hitler's henchmen, or Kansatin's hunt. Aphrodite made off for the kitchen with dirty dinner dishes. Hermes fell silent, fiddled with a chocolate digestive, mumbled under his breath. Zeus stroked the remote. Hush, he said, the second half starting.
It feels very lonely without Paul's final poem. I keep hearing parts of it in my head and I can't remember. We'd never reconstruct it with me.
It's
an aftertaste.
There's
purple and there's ocular as well.
There's vampires.
There's vampires with dripping sweet poetry.
Skinani,
and then there's a film, and what happens then? Yeah, purple poetry, purple drunken deeply of purple, of contradiction.
Nectar-filled ambrosia.
Nectar-filled ambrosia.
He's going to see this film, you
know. He is, but it's pure love for the purple poem that I wish I knew. Because it's not Ovela ending without him. This is a hard old job that he does, and he does it perfectly every week and makes it look
easy.
Yeah, I was totally just looking for compliments. Okay, final, last call for poems.
Okay.
Nearly illegal substances.
Illegal in some countries.
Probably in mine.
Quite legal here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here.
I couldn't. I could try, but
no,
I
don't.
No. I don't think I could piece together one of mine at this point. But thanks very much for the love. Thank you very much for a great evening, and we'll see you next week for Adler's Last Chain.
Welcome
to it. Good night. And if you would like to congregate at the Crane Lane, I'm sure there will be people there to talk to. Crisis is useless nowadays. It's survival of the egoist. This is the age of the scavenger, holidaying on the cheap and former war zones, taking excursions after natural disasters. I fill the tank with the bones of liquid history and I fly there faster. I crave blood diamonds to scratch worth into my precious days. Their hard light refracting over the stones of stolen temples. Elgin thieves, but I pay my fees to take a honeymoon photo of history. I surf strangers' pages and ignore my neighbors, and instead of taking a moment for some soft act of creation, I feed on some old carcass broadcast by a global TV station. Thanks.